This podcast was recorded in the podcast studio at the Great Room Afro-Asia in Singapore. Welcome to Greater Encounters by the Great Room, the podcast series where great minds meet and where curiosity meets knowledge. Let's dive right in.
Hello, and welcome to the Greater Encounters podcast. I am Yas Pang, the guest host for this podcast series. Today, we're going to dive into a very interesting topic about cycle for water. Joining me is Greater guest speakers William Pradier. So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and Cycle for Water movement?
Hello, Yos. Thank you for receiving. Yeah, sure. So I'm William Pradier. As you said, I'm 24, and I'm currently crossing the world with bikes to speak about water. So in fact, I'm part of a movement which is called Cycle for Water. And our goal is to cross the world with our bikes and to communicate about water preciousness, about water scarcity, and also to intervene on the field with some NGOs to help people getting better water access.
Great. So how did your team come up with this idea of cycling to raise awareness for water access projects?
As a lot of movements, I think it's about inspiration. Cesar, one of the members of the team, saw a conference from a guy who did Cycle for Water previously. And he thought, wow, it's amazing. Such a movement needs to live again. And he decided to speak with us about that. And it really makes sense for the four of us to do that. We were at the end of our studies, so it was a perfect moment for us to engage in such a movement. Personally, since I've been a child, I always thought about working for UN. I've been always passionate about diplomacy, about helping people, helping solving issues. And to me, being on the field with Cycle for Water, meeting so many countries, so many different cultures, was the perfect opportunity to being more experienced about helping people and solving issues.
Great. I love this altruistic movement as well, because personally, I sit on this board called Cycling Without Age in Singapore, and the beneficiaries are actually elderlies. And I love these movements, these things that, you know, actually we can create like a wave on that. I love to hear more about, you know, how you've mentioned there's different generations and batches in Cycle for Water. If you can explain that, how it started from inception till, you know, your generation that picked it up.
So Cycle for Water has been born in 2013 with two Netherlands people. They decided to cross from Alaska to Ushuaia, so from the extreme north of America to the extreme south. And they were already speaking about water preciousness, even if it was like 10 years ago. They were really aware about that, and they connected with young generation along the field. They raised money for water projects also. And then in 2015, two French guys did the trip from France to New Zealand to also speak about water. They raised money for a water project in Thailand and Indonesia too. And we decided after COVID to make it alive again and to do the return trip, started to New Zealand and going back to France.
Wow. So it's all over the world. And I also read a little bit about, you know, the 25,000 kilometers. Does that work for every group? Like everyone travels to like 25,000 kilometers every day until you hit that point?
In fact, each when a generation will get Cycle for Water after us, they will decide if they want to do 30,000 kilometers or only 20. We want each team to build their own itinerary. Like we would love that a team goes to Africa because it's water, of course, is very important subject there. So if the itinerary is different, longer or shorter, we don't really care about that. It's more about having impact on the field. That's what really matters.
Right. And can you tell us about, like, you know, on the field, these local communities that you're trying to support? Do you, I don't know, carry water from place to place? Or, I mean, I'm just thinking, you know, how the listeners are thinking about this.
Yeah, of course. Good question. We are collaborating with NGOs on the field. So NGOs that are implemented in the field for a long time, because we want to be sure that they are reliable and they are working closely with population, that they have strong links with all the local authorities to be sure that the project will last long in the future. So we focused on finding this kind of NGOs all along our road. And when we did that, we are raising money to support their projects. And then we are going on the field to help them deploying the solutions. We want to also work with communities, live with communities to really understand how they are living, what are their pains every day. For instance, in Indonesia, we intervene in Flores Island, so near Bajawa, in very rural communities that do not have access to clean water. water. So we stayed in a village with the population. We helped. So our focus in this mission was about planting trees, because planting trees are very important to restore water cycle, to recharge grounded water also. So we really focused about that. And it was amazing to see the links between Pouguet Figo, so in French it's cœur de forêt, forest earth, and the link between them and the local population. Like almost all the villages were working in the NGO. So it was amazing for us to see how deep was the relationships, and we were really happy to help on the film.
Oh, that's amazing. And, you know, what can these individuals or communities do to support your cause beyond just donating funds? As you mentioned, you know, you cycle to raise funds and at the same time coming out with projects to do water plantation, which is also very important because of global warming nowadays. Yeah. So what do you think individuals and communities can do beyond just raising funds from your point of view?
It's interesting. There are many points about acting and helping the water cause especially, but as you said, the climate change. First of all, you can focus on your actions, on your personal actions. Of course, we have a lot of data, a lot of good examples of things which are good for preserving water and which are not. So first, you can like maybe try to learn more about things like virtual water. The water footprint, it's something very interesting to understand, because you can do a lot of efforts in your daily life but forget to focus on what really matters, especially about water saving. Like a lot of water is really hidden in some products we have, such as smartphones, such as meat, such as some kind of food, clothes, for instance. So I would say, yeah, try to learn more about where is the water in our process, and then talk with other people, like lobbying a little bit, and try to connect with people that have some powers that can do some big scale water savings. Try to make them understand that water is very important in their process, and therefore they have to protect it. And it's especially the case in agriculture, for instance. Agriculture is one of the main subjects regarding water preservation, and that's also the sector that needs the more water, because we need to feed our populations, of course. But you have a very good practice regarding water. While preserving the grounded water, you are also preserving your soil. And it means you will have better food, better cultures. So you have to think like long term when you are thinking about water, and try to avoid very short term initiatives.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. And I'm just looking at your jersey. It literally says this logo, no water, no us, which is exactly your point about how we can't take, you know, what we have for granted, like water, air, food, right? So this is a phenomenal project movement. I love the idea. I'm going to switch gears a little bit to talk about your experiences and like your team. The first question I was going to ask is, how did your team with such a diverse background, obviously you mentioned your close group of friends with different professional degrees and careers, coming together to cycle for water? And I mean, you know, what was that defining moment that you say, hey, you know, let's all come together and just do this?
In fact, we were speaking about doing something together after our study, after having some experiences. We wanted to build some things and to have more impact than we had in our backgrounds, because we worked in Paris, for instance, in big companies, in consulting, and you sometimes feel like you are just a little part of something and you are not also like able to build what you really want to build. And for us, it was interesting to be in charge of something, to really embody some things also. Embodying was very important for us. That's why I have my gear now, as you can see.
I love it. I get one?
Why not? If you are part of Cycle for Water, you can.
Absolutely. Okay, cool.
And yes, it was really about embodying something.
Right. Okay. So I love this embodying, this belonging, and this impact they're creating. So could you share with the listeners what are the highlights and the lowlights for cycling together with the team? For your case, it's 25,000 kilometers across several countries.
So we started in New Zealand in November, so it was still very rainy period, and very beginning also for us, so we weren't very as experienced as now in our bikes. We weren't as experienced as now as a group, because the biggest issue, the biggest things is about preserving the group and maintaining good relationships between each other, because we are not only working together, but we are living, sleeping, eating, like we are all the time together. So we discovered that it was very important to take time, some time for preserving individuality. But I would say that the biggest challenge is about the group, living as a group always together. So it's one of the things we made a lot of progresses. And also the beginning was physically very hard. Like in New Zealand, it was very hilly, of course, very rainy all the time. We had some snow at some points. And for us, yeah, it was very challenging. I think we really built our mental strength in this country. And after that, in Australia and Indonesia, it became far more easier for us because we had better feelings and better knowledge about how hard can a day be. So I would say, yeah.
Okay, thanks for sharing. So I'm personally a cyclist as well. Yeah. And I've cycled also, I mean, the most I've done was 160 kilometers at one go for a race. And obviously, you know, you cycle as a team. So different people have different speeds and, you know, different physical capabilities as you ride. So, but because you have to ride as a group for a mission, I think it's definitely challenging. I can absolutely understand, you know, how that feels going from, you know, place to place. Yeah. And the terrain matters as well. As you mentioned, you cycled in, was it in Indonesia or?
Yeah.
Yeah. So then I guess, you know, it will be a different terrain completely from like Europe and with the weather conditions as well. So that's a great effort. So how have you been able to leverage on your experience cycling and translate it to say life, something that you would teach yourself, you know, in your life?
You will learn a lot about yourself when cycling, especially when cycling every day as a routine. You have to build, like I said, routine. You have to almost learn some processes. You have to learn, like in big efforts, you will learn a lot about yourself, about how you behave when you are suffering, how you manage emotions when it's going too big in yourself. Because as you mentioned, we are four, so we have four different paces. Sometimes somebody will be very, very happy, will be very strong, and the other one not at all. So you have to manage also how you behave with other people. I mean, so I think it's very useful in all our future experience when we will have to work as a group. I think it would be far easier for us to understand people that are suffering because we know how it is to have to continue cycling like 100 kilometers, even if you have some pains, even if you are very tired, even if you had some bad news, for instance, from families or things like that, you have to keep going. So I think, yeah, you really learn about how to behave yourself, how to manage your emotions better, and how to overreach your limits also. It was really about that. I didn't think I would have been able to do all the things I did in my bikes, and I did it. I didn't know it was impossible, so I did it, I think. But yeah, you are really learning about going more far than you thought it was possible.
That's brilliant. So if you could do this again, how would you do this differently?
I think I would try to focus on communication more at the beginning, because I think we didn't understand that the biggest point was about communication and about living as a group. We thought that the physical part would be the most difficult. So we tried to focus on being strong. Maybe we focused too much on being strong individually at the beginning, but the most important thing is to being strong as a group. So to protect each other, that's something we understand now, to protect each other, to respect each other all the time in difficulties or in moments where everything is good. So I would say communicating more as a group and not focus too much on the physical part.
Okay. And so I guess before we move to the next segment, which is talking about leaders, I really want to hear from you about how you and your team measure success, whether be it like the cycling and the impact of the movement, and how are you able to see some of these successes so far based on what has been developed?
Yeah, interesting. There is two different things, like the external regards, the external point of view on what we are doing and our point of view between the four of us. We are very, I would say, exigent between each other and for the group. And since we are always in the group living the adventure, we can't really see how it looks like from an external point of view. So I would say that we are really always progressing, always trying to do better, the four of us between each other and for the group. But on an external point of view, I think we are getting more and more people writing articles about us, for instance. We are connecting with far more people. At the beginning, we were contacting people when we were building the project. Now people are contacting us to talk about what we are doing, to try to connect with us. We also feel that we make difference when we are on the field. Like connecting with core communities, connecting with people really directly, it was a big trigger for us. We understand that what we were doing had senses, that what we were doing can really help people on the field. And that was the best way for us to understand that we were making progresses, that we were good at what we were doing, and that we had to continue doing that and always better.
That's great. So you were saying that connecting with the community is one. I think that's absolutely number one thing that I think is what your movement is about. And then the second part, I actually also read a little bit in your short blurb that you've been on like broadcasts and like lots of articles writing about Cycle for Water. I think that kind of awareness and extension of networks certainly helps with it to keep the longevity of this. And it's also a very good segue for me to talk about leadership focus, simply because we are at the Greater Club and we want to know more about, you know, what this whole entire initiative and work that you and your team have built. So since we have listeners from different areas and very multifaceted, can you share an advice from a, I don't know, building a business or from a life point of view based on your team's experience face through Cycle for Water? Yeah. Like what is one or two advice that you give to our listeners?
One of the focus I would talk about is about confidence. Like when you are building something, when you are starting from nothing, you will want people to have confidence on you, to trust yourself, to trust the very beginning of what you are doing, because you are at the beginning not able to trust yourself enough. So you want other people to trust you. And I think it's a big mistake. For us, it was a big mistake that we learned very fast, hopefully. But we've really focused after that on trusting ourselves first, being really sure about what we are doing, being really sure about the impact we will have. Love, like being really in love about what we were doing, it was the first thing we had to learn. And it was hard at the beginning because you are always looking for people assessment, you are always looking for people telling you that what you are doing is a good way, and nobody will tell you that at the beginning, I think, nobody except yourself. So that would be the first thing I would like to stress. And I would say also asking for support with people that have the knowledge. When you build something, you will need a lot of different knowledges and you can't have everything. Of course, in our adventure, one of the big things is about communication and giving the word to specialists about water. So we met a lot of specialists in France. We are also meeting a lot of specialists all along our road. And for us, we can't speak about very deep subjects regarding water because people worked on it for 40 years in their life and they have to talk about it. So I would say when you need help, when you need information, always try to find people that have the knowledge. It will be better than asking them for help when you did some mistakes. So first of all, focus on where is the knowledge and ask for help.
Okay. Yeah, those are great ideas and great advice we all should have. And I think it will carry beyond just work, but also in our lives as well. So this part here is really a lot about giving your advice on someone who is interested in starting their own charity initiative focused on, you know, it could be water, could be anything, but how would you advise someone when they want to start something like that? And based on, you know, the challenges that you've mentioned, as well as some of the exciting stuff.
I'd say first, after having enough confidence and being really sure about what you are doing and why you are doing it, just try to focus on very little steps at the beginning. Build your initiatives. Like, I won't say slowly, but step by step. Try to have really fast some quick wins. Think about it with many people. Try to do some interventions, even with, I don't know, little schools, even with children, even with your family. Like, gather all your family, I don't know, 10, 20 people, your close friend, your neighbor. Try to ask them for listening about what you are doing, to see if what you are speaking about is understandable for people, if it creates some reactions in their mind. Do some tests at the beginning, just to assess how you are able to engage people in what you are doing. Going too fast into big events, into organizing a lot of things, it can be a little bit dangerous because if you are not strong enough about your subject, you will always find people that will be able to challenge you and that will not understand really your point. So yeah, start little. It will help you to grow bigger very fast.
Right. Thank you. So finally, is there anything else you would like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, there is some things I think I learned during this trip. It's when you are in situation of rush or in situation when emotions into a group, when emotions are going very high, when people are very stressed, it's really important to be able to analyze why emotions are coming like that and to forgive people for having such emotions sometimes. When working on the rush, it's completely normal to have difficulties to understand each other and to communicate. So you must be tolerant with other people and exigent with yourself. I think it's important when living as a group and for people that are working a lot, that are getting a lot of meetings all the time, colds everywhere. Sometimes you get tired, so you get emotional at the end of the day. So just relax and accept that other also can be very emotional sometimes, and talk again on the morning after. You will have a lot of different discussions, I think more constructive. So yeah, don't be angry about people that have emotions, I would say.
Thank you for sharing that. I love that. I also feel that sometimes we let the emotions get the better of us without focusing on, you know, what is the greater plan and the mission. So thank you for sharing all of that. We have a fun and interesting section, which is the greater card game. So I will let you pick three cards at random and you will have to answer them in split seconds. No, I think you can think for a bit, but yes.
Okay, so I take three.
Yeah, I can read the questions or you can read the questions.
As you want. I can have the surprise if you read.
Okay, so what have you overcome in the last year that you thought you could not?
Wow. If I think about New Zealand, I could say mountains. But in fact, I would say being able to embody something as strong as water, to be able to really embody the cause. I didn't think that I could link myself so strongly to this cause, that I would be able to be so engaged and so motivated. So I'm really happy to see that after all the experiences we had, I'm really now living what I'm saying and understanding what I'm saying.
Yeah, I love that. And congratulations, you have another card that is very similar. And it says, what is one challenge you are facing right now that you find it hard to share with people around you?
It would be some things about always being in a rush and always and never, it's not never resting, but never have a fixed place to rest. When you are always cycling all around the world, you do not have home. You just go to people's home or outside. And some people say that your home is in your mind and you can relax in your mind, find places where you can relax. I hope I will become strong enough to really have my home in my mind. But yeah, sometimes I feel like it's hard not to have comfortable places. When I say comfortable, I mean with places you know very well, surrounded by people you know very well. It's comfortable, so that's something that maybe I miss a little bit and a challenge I have to face. And it's hard to talk about it with people that do not know what it is not to have home. So I think it's something that I can't really share.
Thank you. And the last card that you've picked is, tell us about an act of kindness that was once shown to you that you will never forget.
I have it on my finger. I think this is the first time I talk about that. When we intervened in the village in Flores Island, we built very strong links with communities there. They were telling us that we were part of the family there because it was a village with only people from the same family. So they were calling us uncle and auntie. When we left the villages, everybody cried in the village. We cried. It was only a week, but we are still communicating with them, sending photos, pictures. It was very strong. And one of the guys, we exchanged things. I gave him a cap and he gave me this ring I'm wearing in my finger now. And I think I'm always touching him and looking at him, remembering how strong it was, how it changed my point of view about a lot of things. So this act of kindness means a lot for me.
Thank you for sharing that. Thank you, William, for joining us today.
Thank you very much.
And for sharing so much about, you know, your insights for Cycle for Water, your movement, your mission, your team's experiences, your challenges, as well as the very insightful advice. And of course, answering with such sincerity and passion of this project and answering our questions for the greater card games as well. I really enjoyed myself personally, and I'd love to learn more about this. And with that brings us to the end of this episode. So if you listeners would like to learn more about Cycle for Water and this movement, as well as about William, all information and links can be found in the podcast description. Thank you for listening to Greater Encounters.
You've just listened to the Greater Encounters podcast. This episode was produced, recorded, and edited by the team behind The Great Room. The Great Room by Industrious is co-working inspired by hospitality. With locations worldwide spanning across APAC, North America, and Europe, it is recognized as one of America's 500 fastest-growing companies by Inc. magazine. The Great Room offers hyper-flexible workspace solutions to support a variety of unique office needs. Through community events and experiences designed to cultivate connections and amplify professional learning and development, we change the way you feel about coming to work. Greater Business Club by The Great Room is a next-generation business club for leaders building leaders. We facilitate an ecosystem of learning, collaboration, connection, and giving back. For more information on The Great Room, or if you would like to join the Greater Business Club community, head over to www.thegreatroom.co. If you would like to listen to more episodes, follow us on LinkedIn at Greater Business Club. That's where we'll share exciting news about our next episode releases and much more. Until our next encounter, be greater.